Hello?
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 Yeah.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome. I don't know if all of you received my email because I saw some late registrants, but I sent an email asking you to consider a couple of things. One, right now, take a moment and write the title of the book you intend to write or the one that you're in the process of writing, just to write it down right now. If you didn't see the email, do it now, just the title. I also ask a couple of questions to consider to either respond directly right now or to send in to me by email. If we were to sit down together right now, pre-COVID days, and I were to ask you, what's the most important thing you would like to get out of this seminar series? What would you say? And the second question, if you were to walk away from this series 4 weeks from now saying it was one of the best and most informative series you've ever participated in, what would you walk away with? So just to consider, and those sound very much like the two questions that we ask and that each of you probably ask your coaching clients. What would you like to focus on? What would you like to take away? So we're going to look at four of the significant components, in my view, of writing a book and creating a system to do it. The art, craft, the science, and the business of writing. One for each of our four seminars. I'm going to ask if you would be really aware. We have a large group. Please be really aware of background noise. Unless you're ready to ask a question or make a comment, would you please mute *6? Now, as soon as we start the seminar portion and I do a presentation, I'll put us on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about that. But I'd like to keep an open mic at the beginning and the end for discussion, for question and answer. So does anybody want to respond now with what you'd most like to get out of this series or what you want to walk away with? Anyone? And thank you for those of you who have already responded.
Hi, Dave. It's Eric Jack here. I didn't see the email, but I can answer that pretty quickly for you.
Okay.
I have written several books, but I'm giving serious consideration to combining them into one larger volume that I really would like to see published based on where I am with my coaching and training curriculum. So I'm really interested in the business side of the whole thing.
Okay. We're going to look at the 8 or 9 different ways to go about publishing depending on, or ways to publish specifically, depending on your objective. So you're in the right place, my man. So welcome. That's great.
As always, my friend, good to be with you.
Okay, thank you. Other responses to either of those two questions?
Hi, Dave. This is Michael Patterson.
Hey, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing right. Hope you're
great.
Hope you're well.
Yeah, super.
I'd like to know how to structure the book so that it can engage a large audience and be marketable and promote business. That's, I guess, a number of objectives, but
and
I tend to write too academic.
All of those fit together and begin with how do you engage the reader, and we're going to be talking about that and some of the psychology and neuroscience about doing that and how it can be beneficial. So, yeah, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Who else? Anyone else want to add anything to the hopper here?
This is Jerry Popoli from Honolulu, Hawaii.
Hey, how are you doing, Jerry? Haven't heard from you in a long time. What's going on?
Yeah. Oh, good. Great to be in your class again. What I wanted to take away was I know you talked about it before, just a system where I could easily just flow and just keep writing and then to be able to, to match it up to what I'm trying to do with the book and to be able to market it. So just a system where I could flow and then just develop one where I can, because right now I don't have any type of system, so maybe I could learn from you a system that I could use and be more effective.
Well, you just condensed all four of our seminars right there, so you've already got the secret. If you want to change or develop a new habit or create a new habit, instead of focusing on the goal, because everybody has the same goal, focus on the system. And that's exactly what we're going to do as a part of this, to create a system that will be something you create that's unique and specific to you, and look at what you bring to it, your biorhythms, and to create the algorithms that'll go along with it for you to be most productive. So that's great. In fact, Stephen King said, you know, you don't wait for the muse. You sit at your desk from this hour to this hour every day, and the muse will find you. So that's another version of what you do, of a system. So anybody else? Other input, questions, or comments? I'll reserve a bit of time at the end for any clarifications or questions, but I want to be sure that I catch everything that you'd like to discuss or add at the beginning. Any other responses to those questions? Well, we will start. I'll put us on lecture mode. And we're going to begin with talking about the art of writing. So, in terms of preparation, here's one version of the backstory. It's been said that just about every smart, sensitive person has a desire to write a book, because writing is a natural way for us as contemporary people to learn, express, integrate, and to really feel creatively alive. In fact, more than 80% of adults in America say they want to publish. Just over 1% actually do that. That includes articles, editorials, not just books. So first decide if you have a message, a blog series, an article, a white paper, or a book. A message is a written or spoken communication of an idea or point of view. An article and a white paper can convey a message and information. A short series of blog posts can succinctly spread even a complex message. A nonfiction book builds a case, develops and illustrates a theme. So a book needs a story to hold its richness. It carries the reader along with a course of reason and illustrates the application. The story involves an argument with complexity and depth. Any story has three components: the challenge, the development, and the resolution. We're going to talk about that as a kind of structure, but focus first on the art. The irony of this, as Seth Godin points out, the market demands that you summarize your book in a blog post. So don't forget about the essence of clarity, brevity, and simplicity. Traditional advice has been to write about what you know. Well, here's another, I think, more exciting and creative possibility. Write to see what you have to say. Write about what you most need or want to learn. Every book I've written, every blog, every white paper, every even complex communication is I write to see what I have to say. At a conference, from a different perspective now, a conference many, many years ago when I was still practicing psychoanalysis, I was talking to a buddy who I knew was an excellent clinician. We were discussing the paper that was just presented after it was over, and I asked when he was going to write a paper. He said, I'm going to wait until I'm sure I have something to say. I knew at that moment he would never present a paper at that or any other conference or write a paper or anything of substance. Unfortunately, I was right. Those of you who have trained or mentored with me know that not knowing anything has never stopped me from talking. So think about that. We're going to discuss how to write in a systematic, structured way for effective and successful results. We'll talk about what happens next when you schedule an appointment with yourself to write, a series of appointments, actually. We'll discuss the art, the craft, the science, and then the business of authoring your book. In short, how to tell and sell your story. First, commitment. A prerequisite is a game plan. You don't have to wait for motivation. You don't have to be motivated to do something. I work with pro athletes. They're not motivated, and actors. They're not motivated to get up and go to the gym every day, but they do because they know it's what they need to do in order what's next. To do what's next, all you have is a plan and to stick to it. Now, first, make sure your commitment and your game plan match. You know the words of somebody who's not totally committed, I'll try, I should, I ought to, I want to. You know that's never going to happen. I'm going to try to stop drinking. You know they're going to keep drinking. Here are the words of someone who's committed, I will. And remember, that's what we want to get our clients to do at the end of the session, to look at how they're going to put what they've learned, what we've collaborated together in action. I will, a commitment. One of the great philosophers of the 20th century said, try not, do or do not, there is no try. Of course, that was Yoda, The Empire Strikes Back. And think about the difference between a 99% commitment and 100% commitment, all the difference in the world. Here's the Texas version of that. A fish has no use for a lake that has water 99% of the time. USA Today did a study on people who made New Year's resolutions. Large study. Two groups. One who made a New Year's resolution and wrote it down. Those who made one but didn't write it down. You know the results of this study already, maybe not the specific numbers. Those who didn't put their goal in writing, 4% kept their resolution. Those who wrote down their resolution, 44% kept it. Why is that? Because when you put something in an output channel, such as writing it down, making a commitment out loud, you completed the circuitry in the brain. Very recently, University of Waterloo did a study of two groups of people, large groups matched evenly. One, they both read the same passage from the book. One group read the passage out loud. The other group read it silently. The ones who read it out loud did 40% better on the test. They put it in an output channel. When you write down a commitment, back to the USA Today study, it produces a tenfold difference of follow-through. So write down your commitment to complete your book. Neuroscience teaches us that the brain works like a travel agent. Remember back in the day when those existed? The first two questions a travel agent asks, where are you going, when you want to get there? So program your brain to complete a book by a chosen date. So how much do you really want to tell and sell your story? Here's a vignette of an unknown author, and I happen to have seen him present and tell this story in person. He had a collection of heartwarming stories that he thought would make a good book. He shopped it around to every publisher he could find. No success. He shopped it to 141 publishers in all, was rejected by every one. But he believed in the book, even though he was repeatedly told that it just wouldn't appeal to audience. He decided to publish it himself and began selling it out of the back of his car. It had a really sort of goofy title, Chicken Soup for the Soul. He sold $1.6 billion worth of books since. Now, how do you write a book? Consider a related question. Some of you have gone through this exercise with me before. How do you find a yellow Jeep? Close your eyes right now. get in a very comfortable position. Take a deep breath to breathe in relaxation. Breathe out any tension. Another deep breath in of relaxation. Breathe out tension. With your eyes closed, picture a yellow Jeep. Walk toward it. As you walk around behind it, notice the detail, the tires, the trim, the paint. As you walk around the front, notice the grill, the headlights. As you come back to the driver's door and reach out to open it, notice how firm and cool the handle feels. As you sit in the seat, be aware of how fully and securely it holds you. As you grab the wheel and look out the windshield, imagine driving it. Be aware of how it smells, how it feels. As you turn the motor on, listen to the sound. Feel the vibration. Again, grabbing the wheel with both hands and looking through the windshield, imagine what it's like to drive. Now, as you turn it off and get out, close the door. Hear how firmly that door sounds as you close it. And as you walk away, turn around one more time to look back at the Jeep and take it all in. Not too long ago, a group of executives in Houston here invited me to do a workshop with them about writing a first book. There were 24 executives there. The first question I asked them before we began to talk about anything was, how many of you in the last month have seen a yellow Jeep? And they were looking at me like, wait a minute, am I in the right conference? Finally, one person raised his hand. I did this exercise with them. And then ask them to get in touch with me, email or telephone, in the next week if anybody happened to see a yellow Jeep. In the first 3 days, 22 of the 24 people contacted me and had seen a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened? The number of yellow Jeeps in the greater Houston area didn't suddenly increase, but what happened is they pre-programmed their brain to be able to recognize a yellow Jeep. This is what you can do with a book, because seeing something and imagine, visualizing it, activates your brain in exactly the same way. Your brain can't tell the difference whether you're actually seeing it or envisioning it. So look at the detail of doing this. Look at the detail of your book. Envision your book. Once you genuinely see yourself completing your book, all sorts of things begin to happen, not just at the brain level, but in your actual behavior, in what you see. You begin writing and you see things in a different way. You begin to see stories. You begin to see something that you want to include in your book. You begin to recognize that one of the best ways of writing is to read. So you've already coded your radar for your book, including listening right now. So we're going to discuss how to evolve that vision. Now, here's an exercise that I'd like you to consider doing with me. Remember, we're all on mute, so nobody's going to hear you. And this exercise is based on the principle that it takes just as much energy to construct a negative image as it does a positive image. Now, this is going to sound a little goofy, but do it anyhow. I'd like you to say out loud two things you can't do. Like, I can't finish this article, or I can't get the clutter out of my... Say two things out loud that you can't do. I'm going to pause for you to say it out loud. Now, I'd like you to restate each, but instead of can't, substitute won't. I won't do whatever you said. Now, say it out loud with won't. Now, say this sentence out loud three times. I am always free to change my mind. Say that out loud now three times. This is an exercise in choice architecture. This is exactly what we do in coaching, to focus on now and next, to look at the active choices we make to see if it's exactly what we want, and to look at it's not there until we create it. If there's an obstacle, it's not there until we create that obstacle. So we may consider creating something and focusing our energy field in a different way instead. Once you begin thinking about your specific book, you begin to hear things in different ways. You begin to see examples. You begin to think about stories. Incidents become vignettes. Ideas begin to crystallize. You think about what you want to say and become aware of what you want to say it. You become an even better listener, which makes you a better speaker. As you're aware of choice, you're aware all you ever have to do in life is the next right thing. And then when you do that, all you ever have to do is the next right thing. Now, there's a caveat here. Nobody has ever sat down to write a book. That's a lousy goal because every time you're going to fail. You may sit down to write a few sentences or maybe a page, but Mozart never sat down to write an opera. He may have had a medley in his head and let it speak to him, and the story over time emerged. Think about if you sat down to write a book versus if you decide to sit down every day for 30 minutes and write a page of 250 words. Guess what? Every day at the end of a year, you've had 365 failures if you've decided to write a book. If you decide to write a page and do it, guess what? You have a rough draft of 365 pages. Now, even better if you have an outline and know what you're going to be doing and have a system and a structure, but we'll come back to that. Now, in terms of perseverance, the most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick with it. Wisdom is to know the right path, and integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion, can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and life can separate the good from the great. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach's Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. To get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. Lord Eliot put it most succinctly, perseverance is not a long race. It's many short races, one after another. So here are some guiding questions to clarify before you sit down to write. What you want to write, what you want to gain, and who you want to reach, who you want to have this conversation with. So here are some reflections to begin your first book. This is before you begin your first chapter. There are seven. This is in your outline. You have an annotated outline so you don't have to take notes, and then a copy of the workbook for exercises and work tools. As you begin your first book, one, write for a preferred specific audience. Now, you may want everybody to read it, but remember how in the beginning you wanted to coach everybody and it felt like an amputation to narrow it down to a specific niche until it paid off? If you're going to have a conversation with everybody, you have a conversation with nobody. That's like saying, hey, in the airport, the people who turn around are not the people you want to talk to. So think about who specifically you're going to have a conversation with. This is the challenge of the beginning. What is their challenge? What are their major issues that you want to begin to have a conversation in writing with? Two, envision your audience. Imagine prototype individuals of that audience. Speak directly to them. Write a focused, compelling, understandable, and enjoyable conversation. Make it sound like you're talking. It'll be much more engaging that way. And find out what your preferred style is to do that. Mine is talking. You would never guess. if I start writing stuff down and using a legal tablet or trying to write it on the computer, it gets all convoluted. So I carry a little digital dictation device wherever I go. I have one in my car, my pickup when I go to my ranch, every place I sit, so I can grab it and start talking. That's how everything I've written has come about. I have an imagined audience, and I began to speak to them, and I just start recording, send it to a transcription service, and they send it back to me for a penny and a quarter a word, and that way I can focus totally on the immersion in the conversation. Now, four, what's your aha, your good news that you want to convey? Five, what will your book, your communication, do uniquely well? Six, reach out for feedback, for opinion molders, focus groups. Get feedback. You don't have to do it in isolation. This will let you test your ideas. This will let you see if you're really capturing the challenge of your intended audience. And seven, an initial step to create your book is to fully accept the reality of the process of writing and to evolve your identity as an author. Because that means if you don't write, if you have a designated time and you don't write, it's like something's missing. You're doing it wrong. You know, I work out 6 days a week. If I don't, and it's not because I love working out, but it's gotten to the way long ago, it's gotten to the point, if I don't work out, I feel like something's missing because part of my identity is that's what I do. That's what I do at 2 o'clock every day. Same with writing. When you end the day and you can reflect back on what you've contributed that will last beyond you, bonus. I want to share an experience that was pivotal for me to see if it might be helpful for you. Many years ago, I was writing, it was at the time a personal book. It wasn't the first number of books I did were professional for psychiatry, psychoanalysis. The last half of my writing has been for ordinary people. And this was somewhere in the middle. I was writing as my own therapy. When my oldest, my son, was when I knew it was inevitable, he wasn't going to hold up and stay at home and just hang out with me, that he was actually going to go to college, and that became a reality. I began about a year or so before he left writing about my experiences, my reflections, because I knew I needed to not burden him with it. And I continue that. His sister graduated 2 years later, and I continued that till at least 6 months or so after she left. And it's called Making Memories, Reflections on Parenting from the Heart of a Father and the Mind of a Psychoanalyst. Here's what I wanted to say about that. I went a couple of times to the Iowa Summer Writers Workshop, because that's where I saw a lot of the people I most respected went. And I shared the first time there with my group, my dilemma. I was still practicing psychoanalysis at the time. I wanted to write from my heart, needing to use examples from my experiences as a parent, but I didn't want to burden my present and future psychoanalytic patients with knowing too much about me personally. You know, at the time, and probably still, psychoanalysts think they have to remain totally anonymous and be a blank screen onto which the patient projects himself or herself. Sounds a little goofy, but I drank the Kool-Aid. I got some immensely helpful feedback from the group as well as the well-known writer. When you're writing, you're not a psychoanalyst. You're not a father. You're an author. So write like your subtitle says, from your heart and your mind. Immensely useful, immensely freeing. Eight, you're thinking and feeling a book into existence. Then you'll craft it into a powerful message within a memorable story. Nine, what you imagine guides your endeavor. You learn what your book is about by writing and thinking. You see what you have to say. And finally, you get your book done well by willing yourself to plan, organize, think, revise, and tolerate confusion and uncertainty. The principle is, do whatever it takes. Here's an exercise that might be helpful to address obstacles that you construct. Schedule a brainstorming time with yourself, a session that's 30 minutes or whatever you decide, but make sure there's no interruption, no text, no messages, no calls. If you notice anything that interferes with your creativity, negative self-talk, writer's block, anxiety about the unknown, feeling like you don't know enough, worrying about inexperience, concern about not having anything to say, all of those things are in a time capsule, by the way. They will never change. But if you notice yourself triggered by just even a touch of anxiety or uncertainty, that initiates the entry into that time capsule. So write down in a left column. Make four columns, three vertical lines, four columns. In your left column, write down any emotional triggers. Any trigger that initiates, even for a nanosecond, some anxiety that you notice you've already entered into column two, the usual behavior, the negative self-talk, the doubt, all of those things, they don't change. That's the definition of a time capsule. Notice this process so that as soon as you notice an emotional trigger, you can immediately get grounded and centered. This is the third column, a mantra, a cue, a focus, and a physiology to focus on what you want, take a deep breath, get grounded and centered, and then move into a fourth column, ideal behavior, what you ideally want to do. Now, the magic here is that as you go across these four columns enough and do the movement from the emotional trigger to an ideal behavior, it rewires your brain. You have to do it consistently and repetitively, but it rewires your brain. That's why I've called it the neural conditioning chart. This is a microsystem to get grounded and centered. So this can be basically the first two columns are an old story and the last two columns a new story. So the idea is to quickly cue your radar to recognize any triggers that can distract you and to immediately get grounded and centered to move into that desired behavior. You reprogram new behavior. Now, let's look at some aspects of writing, the who, what, where, when, and how of writing. First, who. Who is it you write for? Your most authentic answer is yourself. When you speak in writing, you do that, though, to an intended audience. Who's your audience? The more specifically you can identify that audience, the more specifically you'll be able to speak to them in a conversation that's meaningful. It's not, you know, global, impressionistic ideas, but really speak to them. The more specifically you envision the reader, the more specifically and meaningful you'll be able to speak. John Updike said, I write to the person a little to the left and below the center of Kansas. Now, one strategy is to envision a persona, a characterization of the ideal reader. So develop that persona fully. Who the person is, location, age, occupation, marital and family status. By the time you've developed two or three ideal personas of the intended audience, you have an idea of who you're speaking to. Your conversation comes alive as you talk to them. Novelists do this. They develop a persona of each of the characters that inhabit their novel. They will know for a particular character what that person made on algebra tests back in the 10th grade. Now, that may never come out in the novel, but it shapes the texture of the person, how they respond, how they talk. So make it easy to connect, create a conversation, a community. The what? You have to respect the marketplace. Be attuned to needs, provide answers, make your approaches to answers accessible, be attuned to what someone else wants and needs. Beyond that, you have to be true to your own story. Who you are is your gift to your writers, to your readers, rather. Writing isn't a special language. It's not a gift you were born with. Writing is simply thinking on paper. And anyone who thinks clearly should be able to write clearly. But you have to work at it. You have to edit it to be sure. So here's a what exercise. Think before you write. Sit down and think about your idea before you begin to write about it. How will you move from current vague idea to rich three-dimensional book? Think about what you'll write along these lines. What specifically are you trying to communicate? What form should your book take? What chapter should it be divided into? What's going to go into each chapter? We're going to address all this, especially in terms of a book proposal. What will you draw from your experiences to enhance the book? What research will you do to deepen the quality? You're not in the business of finding readers for your words. You're in the business of finding words for your readers. This is the process that writers don't usually report, you don't usually see, the thinking part, the preparation. A writer will say in an interview that their book just comes out or just came to them. It doesn't happen in that way. Writing is creative pleasure, but it's also work. The only thing harder than writing is rewriting. One of my good friends, Janine Roth, has written multiple New York Times bestsellers, including some number one bestsellers. She was a guest of mine on a mastermind group and talked about the process of writing. And she shared a story that I had not known before. She said, before I ever let out any piece of writing, I edit it 30 times. Now, some of these edits are after various people, and I've done this for her, with her. Various people read it and give her feedback. And this is part of the work of writing, is rewriting. Where? Decide where you'll write. Virginia Woolf emphasized the importance of having a room of one's own. Get your space ready. Protect it from intrusion and noise. Put one or two things in there that may represent your commitment to writing. This is a physical framework. During the time that you commit to write, protect that space and time from intrusions. Unplug your telephone. Your voicemail will take care of messages. You don't need to respond contingently to somebody because they decide now's the time to talk. There are a few true emergencies in life. Talking to your buddy about who, you know, got kicked off of The Masked Singer isn't one of them, at least not during your writing time. Guarding your writing time is to allow full immersion. I think I just confused American Idol with Masked Singer. I don't think you get kicked off Masked Singer. But anyhow, protect your time because you'll have to pay for every yes with at least one no. When? Make an appointment with yourself. Create a schedule for writing that you'll be loyal to no matter what. Create a system. Everyone on earth has one thing in common. Our choices in life define us. Those who provide service to others, such as authors, money managers, therapists, leaders, teachers, coaches, especially parents, have their answers counted many times. What will yours be? Make it matter. Determine when you're going to write and stick to it. Remember we talked just moments ago, you do not need to be motivated. You have to have a plan and to stick to it and make sure that plan is very specific and very structured. when I had a full psychoanalytic practice and saw a dozen people each day plus teaching, people would ask me when I found time to write. My answer was to say as gently as possible that I never found time to write. I created time. I grew up on a farm and ranch and got up before the sun to feed cattle. And rising early, it was still natural to me. During all of my years of parenting, I still got up early on Saturday and Sunday morning, so I had 2 or 3 hours to write before both of my kids woke up. And by then, I was fully ready to turn off my dictaphone and roll on the floor or play outside with them the rest of the day. Again, during their adolescence, I would be totally available in order to be rendered insignificant. So there was additional time in adolescence, so you guys have that to look forward to, too. Decide what time of the day you write best. Know your biorhythms. Think about when you're most creative. Consider what may be a natural time to write, when you have most inclination to do things also like editing. And think about it. When you match your state of mind, your mindset, to the task, it can be dynamite. Creative writing is a totally different part of the brain than editing. There's going to be a time of the day that you can write creatively. There's going to be a time of the day that you can edit. Even things like, you know, back in the day, I remember when being in the airport or on an airplane, that was a great time for editing. I couldn't possibly have a creative thought, but I sure could edit. So here's my best piece of advice to you. Just start writing. Start simple, start slow, start now. What are you going to do when you hang up the when you hang up the telephone from this conference? Perhaps the most literate answer to the when question was offered over 900 years ago by Rashi, the great Torah commentator, who said, "Whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it." How? Recognize your natural style of writing. Are you visual, auditory, or kinesthetic? Respect that style as you write. Some of you will do best visually at a keyboard and see the words appear on the screen. If you're an auditory person, maybe consider using a dictation device. I no longer use a secretary to transcribe dictation. I do it all, as I mentioned, on a digital recorder and upload it. Even complex emails I do because it's so much easier that way. And then as I assemble things to read, to think about, to create and dictate it, I will assemble it into piles. And sometimes each of these piles has a name, chapter. If you think you'll do better at writing it longhand, and then get a lot of yellow pads. And make sure they're the kind with the really thick backs, because somehow I think that makes writers perform better. Consider also your work and performance styles. These are not elements that are talked about as much, but I think they're really useful in writing as well as in coaching. There's a brief white paper on my website on this topic. It includes the work and performance style. The paper is called Toward Brain Hardware Optimization. It's in the article section of MentorPath. I think it's the first article. One suggestion, whenever you have an idea, even if it doesn't come during your specified writing time, write it down. Capture it. Then get it into typed form. Research on memory tells us that their new idea or facts lasts an average of about 40 seconds in short-term memory, and unless you write it down to review, after that it's gone. Haven't you had the experience of thinking of a great phrase, a really catchy way to say something, or an idea you want to pursue, and I know I'm going to remember this, and later you don't? One principle we know from coaching: when people are asked what they intend to do, they're more likely to act according to how they answer. They want to be and appear consistent with what they've indicated. When you ask people the day before an election if they intend to vote, it increases the probability they're going to vote by 25%. In a study of 40,000 subjects, the question was, do you intend to buy a new car? Being asked that question increased purchase rates in the next 3 months by 35%. Another factor that increases the likelihood of desired behavior is asking people whether they intend to eat certain foods, to diet, or to exercise. One of the basic steps in coaching is to make sure each session includes framing an action plan for the next week that the client intends, commits to do. So, your commitment to yourself, write down your who, what, where, when, and how. Specifically address your intention and your specific plan. Make an appointment with yourself to keep it the same way, the same loyalty that you would with your doc or dentist or accountant. Writing doesn't come about through inspiration. It happens when you decide to sit down and write. Create a system for that. Clarissa Pinkola Estes said, "To be ourselves causes us to be exiled by many others, and yet to comply with what others want causes us to be exiled from ourselves." And a word about creativity. There's a natural, innate energy inside each of us to create, the desire for effectiveness. When we open ourselves to our creativity, we allow our internal experience to flow through whatever channels are natural for us, words, pictures, movement. Creativity is a natural part of life, of expression. As you began the process of your book, don't compare your inside with somebody else's outside. Somebody else's outside may be a complete book or written 6 books. It doesn't matter. When you pick up the book to read it, it can feel daunting. That author did not begin with that complete book. That author, I guarantee you, did not sit down at a desk to write a book. He or she began with an idea, and then crafted a few lines, and then did a few more lines every day, again and again. A great deal of thinking and a great deal of reading are required to write a book. Writers, in discussing their books after they're published, often omit or minimize the amount of work that went into the completion of the books. Now, we can call that a nostalgia bias, airbrushing the past to remember it better than it was. Nostalgia isn't remembering, not as it was at least, but as better than it was. Airbrushed memories set on an idealized stage. When we compare our inside, our hoped-for book looking forward, with their outside, a completed published book, we don't take into the account the true scope of the work. And again, no one ever sits down to write a book. You sit down to write a few sentences. You write for an hour. Your desk and stay there. At the time you've decided to commit to writing, even if you don't have anything to say, you still sit there in case some random string of words occur to you or some expression that you create or need to capture. But then nothing comes to you. You're going to sit for an hour. You don't get to get up and go jogging or, back in the day, go to the mall. Your commitment is for an hour. You do it no matter what. Some writers set a word quota. 250 words is a full double-space page. So here are 10 caveats for writers. The most important thing about a plan is having one. The second most important thing about a plan is sticking to it. 2, write every day. It will help you think like a writer. And I know you have a full-time job or are working full-time at your coaching practice. I'm sticking with what I said. Write every day. It will help you think like a writer. 3, read every day. It will help you think like a writer communicating to a reader. 4, write in a voice that sounds like you. Writing's not a contest. Writing is a transaction between two people, you and the reader. It's a relationship. So sound like yourself and be yourself. If you don't say indeed, then don't write it. If you don't say one would think, lose that. 5, use language simply and warmly. You'll be able to make any subject clear by reducing it to good English. A clear, simple sentence is no accident. The four basic rules of good writing, according to William Zinsser in The Art of Writing, happen also to be, for those of you who have done training with me, and I've pummeled you about with these four words as you speak, as you ask questions to your client, clarity, brevity, simplicity, humanity. 6. How you write will be how you're perceived. Your writing may be your only way to introduce yourself to someone whose business or trust or affection or money is what you want. My wife, we married 15 years ago, she confessed to me that as we were dating, as we were into the dating, and both of us were already gone, so there was no pulling back, she said, "Actually, do you know how I fell in love with you?" And I said, "I have no idea." She said, "When I read Making Memories, the book of you parenting." Well, it had another purpose besides my therapy. I didn't realize at the time. 7, keep the burden of clarity. Writing is about creating meaning. Rewriting is about crafting meaning to make it optimally useful and accessible for the reader. Plan from the beginning to keep the burden of the clarity of communication. Don't shift it to the reader or listener. That's where clarity, brevity, simplicity, that all comes in. You do the work to make it clear, brief, and simple instead of making somebody work to figure out what you're trying to say, because they're going to vote with your feet or start planning what they have for dinner that night. In this way, you maintain the ownership of responsibility to your reader. 8, have the end in mind from the beginning. In the film, The Lookout, Lewis, a blind guy, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, "Start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going." 9, take some positive action toward your goal every day, even if it's just one. At the end of the month, you'll have 30 completed actions. If you just write 2 paragraphs a day, you'll have 60 paragraphs. And that's a bunch. That's a West Texas literary term, by the way. 10, decide what you want, believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception. A belief is the mind's command to the brain, the software program that determines our behavior. We now know from neuroscience that facts and beliefs are anatomical realities in our brain, and that beliefs can actually turn genes on or off. Highlight this equation from your outline. It's 3 words with 2 arrows in the middle. Beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. You can change your life by changing your beliefs. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. Now, here's a final story that I want to share with you. A destitute young housewife had almost no money. Her book idea came to her when she was on a train, but she didn't have a pen. She was too shy to ask for a pen, so she forgot some of the initial parts of her story that she'd worked through in her head. She also couldn't afford a babysitter or a computer, but she had a story to tell and she was determined to do it. She decided to write. When she first thought of what she wanted to write, she started writing. At that time, also, her mother died at age 45 from multiple sclerosis. Her marriage to an abusive husband ended in divorce. And shortly after that, she had a miscarriage. After that, she got fired from her job and lived on government welfare. But she took her baby to a coffee shop in the middle of the afternoon and wrote on a legal pad while her baby napped. She did that every day for 4 years, 7 days a week. Then, after much work, she finally found a publisher for Harry Potter. And her last book sold 11 million, the last Harry Potter book, sold 11 million copies in the first hour, the record for all of history. She became the first billionaire author. So here's an exercise I'd suggest you do. Have I given you enough exercise? This is a kind of a reiteration of the title. I'd like you to sketch two things. I don't care if you don't draw. Don't say I don't draw. Sketch two things. Two separate pieces of paper. Sketch two things. First, the cover of your book. Title, subtitle, your name. Two, sketch that book on a shelf at a local independent bookstore or on the table at the back of your room where you present. Sketch that book in that setting, that framework. Remember, we talked about visualization and you're making it concretized here by your sketch. We're in discussion mode now. We have maybe 5 minutes. I'm interested if any of you have thoughts or questions or even especially clarifications about anything that we've talked about. How did this seem to you? And first, do you have any clarifications? Well, if I was that clear, do you have any comments?
I changed the title.
I'm sorry. This is who?
Carol Omenberg.
Yeah, please go ahead.
I changed the title of my book while I was listening to you talk. And I kind of like it.
I would ask everyone to please stay muted so that we don't get interference, because especially on a bridge line, cell phones and computer phones have a notorious technostatic. Go ahead, Carol, and just say that last again.
Well, I had a title coming into this meeting, and I think it was going through the who, what, when, where, how, and so forth, talking about who I'm writing this book for, and I don't know why that just eluded me, but I just said, oh, I know, and I changed my title, and I'm so excited.
Okay. All right, here's another goofy little exercise, but I would like each of you to take a piece of paper and in the middle of that paper, draw a big circle. Now, inside that circle, I'd like you to draw a stick figure. That stick figure is your reader. Now, to get to that reader, for that reader to listen to you, you're going to need to get inside the circle. How do you do that? And it's the same way when that stick figure represents a customer or a client. You resonate with the client's challenge, the first story component. What's the challenge of that client? What is that? What does that person need that you're going to be able to provide that you're going to resonate with? You can empathically resonate with that person's experience and situation and begin to speak to them so that they'll listen. Your challenge is to get inside the circle. Outside the circle, they're not going to listen to you. Why should they? It's just information. And information is not a way that we change minds. If information were enough, we'd all be thin, we'd work out every day, we'd have a lot of money saved up, we'd eat mostly vegetables, a lot of librarians would be billionaires. But your challenge is to resonate with that stick figure in that circle because that's your reader. And when that person will listen to you, then you're off and running with what you want to write because then you're speaking to someone specifically. So you don't have to worry about how you sound or should you say it this way. Just say it. So thanks for sharing that. Other thoughts, other questions or clarification from anyone?
Dave, this is Michael.
Yeah, hey.
Hi. Under your guiding questions in the notes, 4 through 7, you have write the back cover, write the introduction, table of contents, and an outline. You skipped over that when you were delineating it. Do you still think that is an important thing to do? before you start writing, it seemed like what you were saying was just get writing and that stuff will emerge.
I will come back. Thank you for highlighting that, and I wanted to spend time, because I know we have limited time, talking about what I think would be the most experienced near beginning. We're going to talk about the entire structure as we talk about the craft of writing next time, and look at that in terms of a book proposal, because a book proposal is analogous to the blueprint of your book. And it's as necessary as a blueprint is to an architect. So that proposal, whether or not, only one of the 9 or 10 options for publishing is to go through a traditional agent and a traditional publishing house. But that book proposal is, I believe, the most helpful structured plan you can have for a book. Even if you're planning to self-publish, you still need that book proposal, because it's the detailed outline, it's the purpose, it's the idea of who you're going to market to, because you're going to be doing similar things, whether a big house publishes your book or whether you publish it yourself or do any number of other things in between. So it's a part of the structure we're going to deal with. So thanks for highlighting that. But we're going to come back to that to look at it all in terms of how it fits together. So thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, super. We're officially out of time. Thank you all very much, and I welcome emails and responses to those questions. Those of you who haven't sent those in, I'd love to see them. It will help me get an idea of the kind of things you're interested in to shape and direct our discussion. So thank you ahead of time for doing that. I hope you have a great week. Take good care of yourselves. I look forward to picking up right here next time. Thanks so much. See you guys. Bye.
Hey. Bye-bye.
No, 4 weeks.